Welcome to Features in Languages, a podcast showcasing stories from UCF's Modern Languages and Literatures Department alumni. I'm your host, Christina Torres, and today we'll be talking with Casey Corrigan, who graduated from the MA TESOL program in spring of 2023 year. She is currently a Fulbright ETA in Taiwan, in Taipei City, at a middle school placement as her primary placement. We spoke with her in the fall of 2023, and we're so excited to be able to do a follow-up today, here in the spring of 2024. Thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you for having me.
It is always a treat to get to catch up with you, Casey. And I know that I've been looking forward to chatting with you and hearing how things are going. Could you remind our listeners a little bit about how it was when we last spoke with you? Because you were very early in your placement then.
Yeah. So when we last spoke, I'd only been here for a few months and was still getting the feel of things and how things operate here. But it's been a good few months, and I definitely know more now. It's both with the job and also navigating the city and food and ordering and all that. But yeah, it's been great. It's been awesome. Yeah, and when I first came here, I was helping with six different subjects. As you may remember, I don't really help out in the English classes. I actually help with the electives. And so I still help with the electives now, but I only have three electives instead of six, which is nice. But yeah, it's been good.
Yeah. So could you share with our listeners, what are the elective subjects that you've been helping out in?
Yeah. So last semester it was music, art, IT, English, travel English, and scouting. And now I help with only scouting, music, and art. So some subjects I've stopped helping just to make it easier to co-teach. It was a little difficult to work with so many teachers. And I also didn't see all the classes for those subjects. So maybe I saw three subjects of scouting or three classes for scouting. And I saw another three different classes for music. But now I only teach seventh grade. So I have six classes. There are six classes for each grade. So class 7-1, I'll have three classes with them a week, and then class 7-2, three classes, class 7-3. Mm. It's easier all around, basically, now that I only help with three subjects instead of six.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned scouting. For those of us unfamiliar with this class, what is scouting?
Yeah, so basically, and I was talking about this with my co-teacher, because she asked me, do you have scouting class in America? And I was thinking, I think we have a scouting class. Maybe at my school we did not have a scouting class. It's basically like the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, but it's a class. And so, for example, we were learning about the different kinds of knots and how to make those knots. So, you know, the overhead knot, the figure eight knot, and all that, which was a lot of fun. And then previously to that, we were learning basic like survival skills. And actually for the eighth graders, so not for my class, but for the eighth graders, they had an overnight camping trip. And that was a lot of fun, I heard. Yeah. So right now we just learned knots, and then we're about to start learning a new topic, but I'm not sure what it is yet because we just started a new semester. But yeah, so it's a really fun class. It's really exciting.
Does anybody learn like compass work or things like that in scouting too?
Yes. Yeah. And we were just learning, again, not in my class, but the other class was learning about how to orient yourself out in, not like the wild, well, maybe the wild, when you're out and trying to find your direction. And yeah, I think there was like a name for it. I think like orienteering was maybe the name. Mm-hmm. For it. Yeah, so that, and then compass work, and then yeah, for my class we mainly did knots, and knots actually took quite some time because we each had a rope, you know, and then we had to try to do the knot, and I was helping some of the students as fast as I could, but some of my knots were not as nice as the main teacher. And then the students were tested on it, so we were really trying to make sure that they knew all the different kinds of knots and when to best use them and all of that. Yeah,
that sounds wonderfully practical, and maybe that kind of class would have been helpful to me to get a better sense of direction without dependency on GPS.
Yeah.
In my life.
Yeah, me too.
yeah, I was always very impressed with my husband, who can navigate like by the position of the sun, like he was not a scout, but I admire that. I do remember teaching basic compass work back when I helped out in an environmental center when I was working as a substitute teacher back in the day. And we'd take the kids out into the paths and have them navigate from tree to tree in the markers based on the compass, and that kind of thing was, it was fun. It seems very useful. As an ETA, what is your role in this kind of class?
Yeah, so for example, for the lesson of scouting and the knots, I introduced the knots. So the main teacher said the name in Chinese and I would say the name in English. And then we would watch a video together. But, you know, just watching a video once of how to make a knot is not enough. So then I would help some groups, because there's four groups in this class, there's four teams. And so for each knot, I would just travel from team to team. So for example, for the figure eight knot, I was with group one, which has about maybe six or eight students, and I would show them how to make the knot, and then they would have to try to come up with me and also make the knot. And all this is in English. Obviously, I'm speaking English, and they're listening, hopefully, you know, they're nodding their head, and then we work on it together. And luckily for this activity with the knots, I can show them while I'm speaking, which I think made it easier.
Yeah, it sounds like you're working on vocabulary in both languages at the same time, and probably prepositions, I'm guessing, like over, under, around seems like very helpful vocabulary
exactly,
for knots. Yeah. Well, that's really cool. And you are working in other electives too. Generally, what is your like day-to-day like now compared to the last time we spoke?
Yeah, so now with my new schedule, and I'm so glad you brought that up. I forgot to mention that, actually. So before, you know, I had the six subjects. So when we did the schedule change, so for full grade, you will have an observation each term. So I had my observation last term, and after that observation, there was a professor there, and the professor gave some good feedback about how maybe I had too many co-teachers, which is why this term I only have three. And also last term, we made an adjustment to my schedule. And so instead, we took three classes off. Basically, I took out the English and travel English subjects and instead replaced it with a conversation practice for my co-teachers and any other teachers that just wanted to practice English in the school. And so I started making conversation practice sheets, which is something that I did at UCF as well, right? So conversation practice, so I'd make a topic sheet. So I have that every week for 3 hours now. So I have that, for example, every Monday in the afternoon after lunch, we will go to the library and any teachers are welcome to come. It's not required that they come, but they can join if they'd like. And we'll just have some natural conversation practice. And if they want to change the subject, they're more than welcome to, as long as we're speaking, you know, it doesn't matter the subject. So that's changed. And then for days that aren't Monday, right? On the other days, I have about four classes each day. And so maybe I'll have like second period and then maybe fourth and then sixth and seventh. And then when I'm not teaching in those classes, I'll be at my desk, usually making materials, lesson planning. Or we have an English board that we started, so I'll make some materials for that as well.
English board, do you mean like bulletin board or?
Yeah, like a bulletin board, yeah. And I can't remember if I already started that last time we spoke. That's a little bit new too. So I'll change it every month. They would get a stamp for their English reward card, which is also new this semester, to try to encourage more students to come talk to me outside of class. And really, because I only help out with the seventh grade classes, the eighth graders and ninth graders don't really get a chance to speak with me. So we started this English conversation corner based on the bulletin board. And so every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, during cleaning time, which is 15 minutes in the afternoon, students can come talk to me. So on Mondays, it's seventh graders. Wednesdays, it's eighth graders. And on Fridays, it's ninth graders. And I'll usually have a topic set up. So if they come talk to me during that time, they'll also get a little stamp for their English reward card. And once they get 10 stamps, they can get like a small prize. But
Yeah. And I imagine you get a chance to hear all kinds of stories from your different students coming to chat with you. Are there any memorable conversations that you are feeling good about sharing on air with our listeners?
Yeah. students will ask some interesting questions and really good questions, sometimes about my personal life, you know, the usual, you know, do you have a boyfriend or, oh, you know, are you married and all these other questions. And then also questions about, for example, right now, K-pop is really popular. So we've had some conversations about K-pop, who their favorite boy band is, who their favorite member is. Also recently, because Taylor Swift was just in Tokyo for her Eras tour, yeah, a lot of my students went to Japan with their families for winter vacation. And so they were going to the tour. So before they left, we were talking about her concert. And I've not spoken to them yet about what happened and how they liked it, but I'm sure that will come up the next time I see them. Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds exciting to be able to connect with the students on a casual kind of level too. It doesn't always have to be so formal, front of class kind of engagement with the groups. Last time we spoke, you were also talking about getting to know the city and what it was like adjusting to the city. Could you share with our listeners a little bit more about maybe how that's going?
Yeah. So I definitely have learned to navigate the subway better. I think I struggled a little bit in the beginning because there's just so many different lines. You know, there's like the blue line, the red line, green line. Like for me to go to work, I have to transfer. So I'll transfer once and then I'm there. But for some places, you have to transfer quite a few times to get to where you need to be. And it has happened where I've gotten on the correct line, but in the wrong direction. Mm. And then I have to, you know, I'll get up at the next stop and then just hop on the other one and go back the way I was going before. But yeah, so navigating's been easier since then. And then, yeah, just going out to restaurants more often. I think I may have mentioned it the last time we spoke, but there's a dumpling place right across from my apartment, so I go there pretty often.
That sounds pretty magical, yeah.
Yes, and it's quite cheap compared to America. Mm-hmm. Maybe like I usually get 16 dumplings, and in US dollars, it costs maybe like, I think like $3 for 18 dumplings.
Sounds magical too. Yeah. The price is right and the food is
nice. Right. Yeah. I go there maybe a little too often. They know my order now. As soon as they see me, they're making it.
It feels so nice to be a local, nice. You know, at this point.
No, and then I really do feel like Taiwan has become my home. And I was actually worried a little bit. Maybe I wouldn't feel like that because, you know, with Jet, I had such a good time in Japan and I couldn't help but compare my experience here to the time I had in Japan. Mm-hmm. But thankfully, it's been just as exciting. So I was worried for nothing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so when I was coming, I just went to Japan for my winter break here. And then, you know, going from Japan to Taiwan, my current home, I was worried I wouldn't feel like I was going home. But I did. Mm. Getting back on the subway, you know, I was like, yeah, this feels right.
Nice. And I know part of your experience in Japan and in Jet, because you've shared it before with me, was you had this really lovely cohort of folks that were all working at the same age mostly, but you had a cohort that came in to do that kind of ETA work. Is there a similar kind of vibe in the cohort of your ETAs in Taiwan?
Yeah. I think there's a similar vibe. I think, so for example, like I get along super well with my roommates. We'll hang out quite often. We were just hanging out in the living room before I came here. Yeah. My room to report.
Before I interrupted your Friday night hangout to talk to me.
No, I'm never going
to
interrupt you. No. Yeah, so we were hanging out. And we've gone out a few times for different things. And even the other ETAs, I've gotten to know them really well. And we all get along really well. We'll see each other quite often for workshops and even outside of work, we'll see each other on the weekends to go do things, you know, maybe do day trips somewhere. I do think I'm maybe a little on the older side. I think most of the ETAs have just graduated with their undergrad degree, so maybe they just got their bachelor's. So I think the average age is maybe like 24. But I mean, I'm not old by any means.
I wouldn't say that about you. No, I'll go ahead and say I'm not old, so therefore you cannot be old. But it's cool. And it's nice for, I think, folks who are considering the ETA ship or these types of programs to remember that, you know, I think sometimes there's this fear of, oh, I'm going to be alone. But the reality is you also have a cohort that goes with you and you have the opportunity to get to know other folks who are in the program and in the same boat as you, and I would imagine that that's a very bonding experience.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, absolutely. You know, for both the amazing things that happen and things that are maybe a little challenging, you'll bond over it and really count on them for support throughout your program. So I'm very thankful to have the roommates that I have and the friends that I've made. Yeah, it's really helpful. And it, again, like you said, you really bond over those things and you really feel like a family.
Mm-hmm. I remember I leaned pretty heavily on my colleague during my elfdom. Maggie Mam, if you're hearing us, here we are talking about you. But we saw each other most days. And yeah, we didn't live together and we were at different universities, but we were walking distance from each other, like a 20-minute walk. So we would see each other most days. And we'd workshop together and do stuff together and like all of these things. And we got to go to our mid-year conference together. And that was going to be my next question was, how did your mid-year conference go? Because folks listening, all of these programs have a mid-year training conference where you get together with your cohort and get training and share best practices. I'm curious how yours went.
Yeah, so we've just passed. And for the mid-year conference, it's all of the ETAs in Taiwan that come together, and also the ETFs and other professionals, your TEFL advisors are there, there's guest speakers. So for us, it was 3 days, and they, you know, they put you in a hotel, and it's a really nice hotel too. Mm-hmm. So we're in the hotel. Yeah, it was nice. We all went, there's 150 ETAs in Taiwan. That might not be the exact number, but it's around 150 in all of Taiwan. In Taipei, I think maybe there's 25, but you meet everyone. So even the people in Kaohsiung and the other cities around will all come together for the mid-year conference. And it was really nice. Yeah, we had a lot of great workshops, a lot of great opportunities to talk with other people and learn more about them and network as well during that time. I actually met one of our presenters. Actually, he works in the foreign service. So he talked about that, and he also did JET. So, yeah, you never know, you know? And he's actually the second person I've met here that's done JET. He's the second person. So one of our presenters for the previous workshop had also done JET. So, yeah, you never know. And it was great. Yeah, I had a great time. Got to talk to so many different people. We also got to represent our city, our area. So every area had a little booth. So I was part of the Taipei booth. And so it was nice to also go and see what each area is doing in their location, or what they're doing with their school or their life outside of school. It was really nice.
Yeah, that sounds like a cool moment to really take stock of what your experience has been like at the midway point, which it was for me too. And we had our mid-year in Nepal, actually, when I was placed in Bangladesh. So we got a chance to travel to Nepal and to see Kathmandu and to do that conference. And then we also had the NELTA conference. So we presented at 2 conferences, and it was a wild week, but a good week to get a chance to connect with everyone. So how does your experience as an ETA in Taipei City compare to some of the other stories that you were hearing from your cohort at the mid-year?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the Taipei ETAs were lucky that we have such great public transportation and we can just take the subway, you know, to school, wherever we need to go. Some of the more rural areas don't have as great as public transportation. So maybe they have to learn how to ride a scooter. So they will scooter to and from work and wherever they need to go. And also we have the largest cohort for Taipei, for the Taipei ETAs. I believe when I was speaking to some of the other areas, some places only had maybe 3 or 4 people in their area, so much smaller group. And even some of the other islands surrounding the main island as well, they are a little more closed off in their area. So they'd take a ferry here or to get to our area for the conference. But yeah, and also, I believe when I was talking to some of them were saying they help out more in the English classes. I think Taipei is maybe a little unique in that we work more with the other subject areas, whereas some other ETAs, they will work more in the English classes. So, yeah. And also, I think more people work in elementary schools, so they're in a different setting as well.
Okay. Well, that's all nice comparisons. The neighboring islands, is anyone working in front of a beach kind of area, like out of just pure curiosity?
I kind of think so, yeah. There's some really nice beaches over there. Yeah, and they showed me some photos as part of their booth, their presentation. They had a PowerPoint going on the laptop, and I was like, wow, this is really nice. So I think they might be spending a lot of time at the beach there. Yeah, maybe not right now because it's a little chilly, but later in the summer, I'm sure they'll be there.
Yeah, all of that sounds fun, sounds cool. So it sounds like you have a comparatively larger group of people in your cohort to hang out with since you're in the capital.
Yes, definitely so.
Yeah, and in comparison, you're working with slightly older students than most of your cohort, if I hear you right.
Yeah. So I think even in Taipei, there are some people that work at elementary schools. But I think overall, the program, there's definitely more ETAs at elementary school than junior high school. Mm-hmm. So it's just a different experience as well, you know, with the age difference in the grade level.
Yeah. Do you think your preparation in the MA or having an MA made any difference in the age in which you were placed, out of curiosity?
It definitely had an effect on location. For all the Taipei ETAs, we all have teaching experience or a background in teaching, and they will place you there. And actually, I don't know if I mentioned it before, but when you apply for the Fulbright program, the ETA program in Taiwan, I can only speak from Taiwan, of course, you can put a preference for which area you would like to live in, like which city. And actually, Taipei was not an option. You can't ask to live in Taipei, you can choose other areas. And it's because they usually will only place people with an education background, or if they've studied education, something, if they've been teaching for a couple of years, anything like that, then you'll be placed in Taipei. You're pretty much guaranteed you'll be placed in Taipei. And if you don't have that, of course, it's fine. Most of the people in this program maybe don't have that background. Maybe they studied science or they studied something else, pre-med. You can still get in, of course, yeah. And then for the Taiwan program, you might just be placed in another city that's not Taipei.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have spoken about this on the podcast. I've spoken about this in the TEFL certificate and in the MA too. Mm-hmm. There are lots of opportunities abroad for all kinds of teaching, but in general, you are more competitive for certain placements, and in general, you have a much more comfortable time adjusting when you have your training. Could you share maybe with our listeners a bit about how you've leaned on your training during the time that you've been there? Like, is there anything that kind of stands out of like, oh, I'm so glad that I already knew this coming in? And I know that you had experience in Japan too, but I'm just curious, like, how has training been something that has influenced you as you work in your ETA shit?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've definitely relied on previous training, especially in the MA program. I got my undergraduate certificate. I got the TEFL undergrad certificate, and that absolutely helped as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm especially thankful for the MA program. And being able to take those classes, particularly with, for example, even just something like culture shock, which isn't, you know, obviously directly related to, you know, teaching and learning. But for one class, we had a whole section on culture shock and what you go through and how to deal with it. And also relating to, you know, teaching and learning, absolutely I relied on everything I've learned in class, I feel like. And thinking back to different ways that might be best to teach a certain topic, or how I would go about teaching an activity a certain way, and, you know, making sure I'm trying to reach all students and, you know, to try to get everyone's needs in and everything like that. Yeah, it's kind of a broad answer, but I really have relied on so much of what I've learned in the MA here. Mm-hmm. So I'm super grateful for that. And of course, I'm along on what I learned with Jet and everything. But yeah, I really feel super thankful, especially to everyone in the MA program as well, and being supportive. And you, of course, Dr. Thomas. I was just thinking that earlier today, I was revamping my resume and thinking about everything that I did in my MA program and all the opportunities I had, and having you as my, or being your assistant for 1 year, and then you being my mentor the second year when I had my own class was, yeah, really helpful as well. And having an opportunity to begin with was amazing. So, yeah.
Yeah. We always talk in our, I think about it as mentorship and teaching is all about, offering opportunities and really celebrating the other person, so it was about you, it had nothing to do with me, it was about you. So, but we've all kind of had that moment where we launch into teaching these classes that we've never taught before, and it can be very overwhelming, and we've all been there. So whatever we can do to support folks through that process, we know that you'll pay it forward when it's your turn, that's the circle of teaching, not the circle of life, but the circle of teaching. There's that. I might cut that singing out of this, but
no, keep it in.
That's good, because again, we try to explain to our pre-service teachers and to folks who might be considering these programs just the benefit of being prepared, the benefit of taking the time to build the foundations before you go, because it's like you said, you have culture shock to deal with. You also have your job, and you're there for a job. You get to travel, you get to do fun stuff, but you're there to work also. And just having the ability to get boots on the ground and, get a lesson plan together and know things to look for, know how to approach language teaching, makes it, I think, better, so.
Yeah.
Last time we spoke, you were talking about learning Mandarin in class. How is that going these days?
It's going well overall, I would say, yeah. I'm still taking the same class I was taking before. So it's every Tuesday and Thursday evening from 7:30 to 9:30. So 2 hours twice a week, so 4 hours total a week. And I do really love the class because I think it's a relaxed environment. I don't really feel any pressure when I think, when you're learning a new language, you might get nervous, right? I think most students will say that. They're scared. They're scared.
We've got our effective language factors to use the term, right? Lots of effective factors.
Yeah. So many. Mm-hmm. So in the class I take, is only 6 students in each class, so it's just me and 5 other people. Mm. And everyone, we're all learners, we're all there to grow the language, and we're all just trying our best. I think that's what helps us get through it, is if we make any mistakes, it's okay, as long as we're trying our best, that's all that matters. And I really have enjoyed it. I will say, I think Mandarin is quite difficult to learn, especially with the tones. Mm. I still struggle so much with the tones, because to me they all sound very similar, and even when I say it, my Chinese teacher will be like, yeah, that's the wrong tone completely, I think you should be doing it like this. And of course she says it so nicely, but I'm just like, oh man, I really feel like I'm struggling over here because they all sound so similar to me, Yeah, it's been good, and I am really glad that I'm still taking it, that, I'm still going through it. Mm-hmm. I think I'll probably continue until I leave. And even though I feel like I could be better, I have to tell myself that, I've learned some, and it takes a long time, and I can't be too hard on myself. Because I was thinking about my students, right? I'm like, well, I would hate if they're feeling like this, so let's take it easy, Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I imagine that taking the language class concurrent to the teaching in the same area is a very good exercise in empathy as a teacher.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That is good. And then we can talk to ourselves the way we would talk to our students. I think sometimes we can be harsher on ourselves than we would ever be with our students in our classes, right? Expecting more of ourselves. And yet we'll be like, oh, it's okay. Don't be too hard on yourself. And we need to turn that around and shine it on ourselves too.
No, absolutely. I completely feel that when my students are in class and I'm trying to teach them a new grammar point, for example, or something. And as long as they try, I'm already super happy. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not grammatically correct, even if the vocabulary isn't quite there, if they said something, I'm like, yes, they're using the language. Perfect. Like, let's keep going with that. And then when I'm in my Chinese class, I'm like, oh my God, no, I used the wrong vocabulary word here. Oh my goodness, the grammar's all over the place. And I have to remember, like you said, like, okay, well, you know, if my student had said this, I wouldn't have been as harsh, right? So, yeah, just being, I guess, forgiving towards ourselves.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Speak kindly to ourselves, too. You're mentioning working with your students and your attitude towards your students in the classroom. I'm curious, what are the learning goals for your middle school students? Are they being tested on English? Is there a metric that they're trying to get to?
Yes. And Taiwan, I think their goal is to have a bilingual community by 2030. And this came out a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So, and I think this is partially why there are more and more ETAs in Taiwan as the years go on, is they're trying to reach those goals. English is a required subject here. They have it a few times a week. And also there's another class. I think, actually, yes. So the students have English class a few times a week. And then there's also another class called Travel English. And that class is more of an elective, but they're still required to take it. But it's not as test heavy as the English communication class is. So the Travel English class, I think, is a little more relaxed. And they're focusing on, for example, one of the classes, they were working on how to introduce Taipei to foreigners, basically. So, oh, a foreigner comes and they speak English with you, and how would you introduce, what's something in Taipei you'd want to introduce them to? Is it the food? Is it a certain place? And, you know, they would make a poster for it and talk about that. Whereas maybe in the English communication class, it's a little more test heavy. So they have a set vocabulary they should be learning every week, and also certain grammar points that they're learning. And they ask some really good questions as well. Sometimes I, like, one of the questions, there's one student in particular, she asks, like, the best questions. So I think it was about, we were talking about time, how to, I guess, say time, how would you tell time? Oh, it's 5:37 or 8:30 or a quarter past or a quarter till. And I was saying, well, if it's 8, you might say 8 o'clock. And she's like, what is this o'clock? What is, you know, what does it mean? Why, like, where did it come from? And I was like, oh, I'm actually not sure.
We're looking for the etymology of o'clock, like, yes, of the clock, yes, on the clock face.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Of the clock.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So that one, you know, that was a question. I was like, oh, that is a great question. And I have an answer for you next time we talk. Yeah. And I had to go do a little research, and I was like, okay, of the clock, I see now. Yeah. And also with prepositions as well, we were just learning, you know, being, you know, on a plane or, you know, on the train, but you're in a car, and where, you know, which one do we use for which? And
yeah,
a lot of great questions.
A lot of that had to do with this weird, the things that you had to get on a ladder for, or get on steps for, or you're stepping on to something.
if you're stepping on to something,
if you're stepping on to the plane, then those kind of retained, right? But then we get in the car because we don't have to step onto something to get into the car. It's the history of these things.
Yeah, Yeah, and they ask like great questions, and I'm like, oh man, yeah, let me think about something for a second and get back to you.
Yeah, but we learn from our students, you know, we learn from their questions, we learn from their experiences. It's a very like cyclical thing, right? They keep us sharp too.
They do, yeah. I will say definitely, teaching and getting those questions, you learn a lot. Obviously, you learn a lot in class. But I really feel like also when you go out and teach, you're going to learn a lot as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, Casey, we have our usual segment with our correspondent, Miley, called Ask Our Olympians. Are you ready for Miley's question?
I'm ready.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. As students take on learning a language, what are the benefits of pacing themselves?
All right.
Ooh, that is a great question. Pacing yourself. Yeah, especially, and I'm going to go back on currently as someone learning a language, learning Mandarin right now.
Mm-hmm.
And like we said earlier as well, just being kinder to yourself. And I think that also goes with pacing. I think with pacing, maybe sometimes we are a little overly ambitious with maybe what we think we can accomplish in a certain amount of time. And even for my own students as well, I always tell them, you know, to take it easy. It's not really the correct, I guess, the good way to take it easy. But to always try your best and really don't, I think, overdo it. And I think it's hard too when you are a teacher, especially if you're working with textbooks where they give you, you're going to learn 20 vocabulary words this week because that's what's in the textbook. Mm-hmm. And we're going to learn, three grammar points and everything in this 1 week. And I always feel like, especially some of my co-teachers are always scrambling a little bit with trying to get the pacing down with the textbook and also with trying to make sure that each student is learning what they should be learning, or, you know, making sure we're still on track and hopefully no students getting left behind. And for me, I think I've learned to just whatever time I think it may take me to learn something, to add a little bit of extra time from the get-go, because if I say, okay, I'm going to try to use many words in a week, I think I'm kind of, now I'm worried about learning all the words. I'm focusing more on the time constraint than I am on the actual vocabulary and the grammar points that I should be learning. So I think add a little bit extra time if you can, but I also know that it's difficult. It's easier said than done, I guess, because I know with, especially as a teacher, you have to maybe, you're expected to cover so much in a limited amount of time. And then I think sometimes we're a little too focused on the textbook and maybe studying for exams that we forget. We also want to make sure that the language can be used in the real world and for talking with others and the experience of it, and hopefully not just for tests, which can sometimes happen where maybe they, for example, to enter high school, they have to take an entrance exam and they're going to be tested on English. So they need to know this many words and these many, or, you know, these different kinds of vocabulary sets or grammar structures. So yeah, that's my answer. That's my final answer, I guess. If you can, you know, give yourself a little grace, take it to be kind to yourself, especially with pacing, and hopefully be able to give yourself a little more time with certain things. And also, I think it's sometimes hard to not fall into the routine of, you know, 20 words every week, because also maybe in the beginning 20 words is a little, maybe for someone it'd be a little easier, but then as, you know, time goes on, when you keep adding 20 words or you have whatever goal in mind and you keep going with that, you might start to burn out a little bit, and then you're realizing, okay, I've actually not really mastered this yet, and I'm already trying to keep going and I've not even mastered what I, you know, should have known before. And really reviewing.
Yeah, because you gotta keep the spaced repetition review. If you're adding more, you gotta keep reviewing the old ones to make sure you don't lose the old ones. and all of that can get complicated. We were just talking yesterday in the social linguistics class, which you used to, you know, assist me in, but we were talking in the social linguistics class about being able to communicate in different styles and registers and how a textbook might not necessarily be directing us on dialing up or dialing down when it comes to formality, when it comes to nuances, right? And obviously there comes a moment, or there's a moment when you're beginner enough that we're not ready for nuances yet. But at a certain point, you want to be able to communicate with the speech communities that you're trying to talk with. But if we're focused on just the textbook, sometimes that can be difficult. If we're focused on just the formal code for an exam, that can also be difficult.
I'm sometimes surprised by some of the things in textbooks. And this is not, what I'm going to say is not like from personal experience. It's from something I heard before. I can't place where I've heard it, but someone is telling me they were teaching out of a textbook and it was about, for example, going to the doctors, right? And it, there's a dialogue in there. And I guess one of the things in the dialogue was the doctor says, "What's wrong with you?" I think, but it was like the language was like, well, someone asked, "What's wrong with you?" It might come off as a little harsh versus just like, "Oh, what's wrong?" Or "How are you feeling?" And I always think about that because I'll randomly stumble across those kinds of things. Maybe in a textbook, you're like, okay, I mean, I guess, I mean, grammatically, yeah, it's correct. But maybe, you know, and also sometimes the textbook we use, even at my school now, is, sometimes use British English. And so there's also that, you know, as well, either with spelling or the vocabulary choice, or even something, again, talking about the doctor's office, "Oh, my sister's in hospital." Whereas maybe in American English, you'd say "in the hospital."
Yeah.
You would have the, yeah, it's getting off topic now, but I just, you know, I always think about those kinds of things as well when teaching. And okay, so if we're going to go best for the textbook, then, you know, of course, but if you're going to be tested on American English, then maybe you would say it like this, or, you know, in the end, as long as the communication is there, it doesn't matter. And then, you know, that's a whole topic in itself.
That's a whole thing too. Yeah. But what I hear you saying that there are nuances here that you appreciate as someone who has studied to train, to teach, English, but you're appreciating it too as a, you're reflecting on it also now as a learner of Mandarin. Well, Casey, we're coming up on the end of your interview, and it's just really nice to be able to catch up with you and to do the kind of follow-up on your experiences in Taiwan. Could you share with our listeners what's something that you're looking forward to here in the next couple months as you continue to work in your ETA ship?
That is a great question. I think I'm looking forward to work more closely with my co-teachers now that I don't have as many. And also for outside of work, it's cherry blossom season is coming up. And so there's a couple of different things going on for cherry blossom season. So some special food, some special drinks. That's very specific, but I love cherry blossoms. So I'm really looking forward to that actually. But yeah, so I think just working with my co-teachers, seeing what special events are coming up. The Lunar New Year just passed, I guess. So that was a lot of fun as well. But yeah, so I think just experience everything, both, you know, at work and outside of work and with friends and with co-teachers. I've been lucky that so many of my co-teachers have invited me out to do things. For example, I just recently went to like a fish pedicure.
It's a funny experience, isn't it?
Yeah, that was really interesting. I was a little scared, and I still left kind of scared, actually. I was like, the smaller fish are okay, but there was like people where the bigger fish were.
Yeah, and was like, they're a little bit well-fed, you know, and then they come at you, and they're like, oh, this is very exciting.
Yeah, yeah, so stuff like that, or getting to make scallion pancakes, and, you know, all of that is a lot of fun. Yeah, just really looking forward to just continuing what I'm doing and just enjoying the rest of my time here, really, because I only have about 4.5 more months, and then I'm back.
Yeah, I hear you talking about the importance of relationships, and not just in a networking way, because that feels a little colder, but in the sense of developing connections with folks who are in your cohort and folks that you're working with and experiencing things in a work-life balance kind of situation.
Yeah.
Who would have thought? Work-life balance, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. This has been so nice to catch up with you, Casey. Is there anything that you'd like to leave your episode with for our listeners who are hearing you today?
I think maybe just if you're thinking about specifically doing the Fulbright program and you're unsure, I think apply for it. Especially I'd like to say, like, even if you think you aren't qualified or you think you're not ready, or you're, I guess I'd say, if you feel like, basically, if you think that you're not qualified, or you don't have the experience, I should say, if you think you're not experienced enough, or you don't have the qualifications, to apply anyway, I think. And of course, having experience is a plus, but it's not required. And a lot of people here, they maybe don't have a master's in TESOL, right, like I do, but they're still great teachers and they're still learning, like all of us, I think. So I think if you're unsure, apply, or if you're unsure, talk to people that have done it or are currently doing it, you know, feel free to talk to me, of course, and then talk about more about experience, and yeah, just give it a go, I think.
Thank you, Casey. Thank you for inspiring folks out there. I think sometimes when I have this conversation with students is, oh, I just don't feel ready yet. I'm like, well, a lot of times in life you don't feel ready. Mm-hmm. You just jump.
Exactly.
And you go, and then you learn, and then you mm-hmm. grow from the learning and the experience.
Yeah.
And experience breeds experience. So there
yeah,
you go.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's been so nice to catch up with you, Casey. And I am, you know, as always, looking forward to hearing about your next adventure.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. This has been so much fun. And of course, it's always great to catch up with you as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Futures in Languages. I'd like to give a shout out to Davideo Guy for our intro and outro music downloaded from freesound.org. I'm your host, Christina Torres, and our featured guest today was Casey Corrigan. Tune in next time to hear more alumni stories from Modern Languages. For more information about the MA in TESOL and other language programs in the Modern Languages Department, please visit our website at cah.ucf.edu/languages.